And we're back, hey everybody. It's October. Can you feel it? It is October. You hear that creepy music? By the way, this is my son, Os the Bass Boss. Go to YouTube, Os the Bass Boss. I put his link in all my videos, the most recent videos. You'll see it. Little Austin Carter, he's 13 years old. This video is one of my new favorites, man. He's putting on costumes, doing characters. It's a little Halloween special, he calls it. And check it out. Here's just a little bit of it.
I told my doctor I was in love with you. I told my doctor you didn't love me too.
I love this part.
And then my doctor, he told me what to do. Listen, he said that
this is all him.
I was working in the lab late.
All him. You get the idea, but go check that out. Go check that out. Os the Bass Boss. A-U-S. Os the Bass Boss. All one word. Okay, guys, we've got a great episode for you. I want to thank you guys again for coming out and listening to the Pocket Party Podcast. If you watch it on YouTube or listen to it on YouTube, or if you're on the go and you listen like this. So thank you so much. Anyways, we're going to get into the episode right here, right now. And do me a favor and... if you like this, share it. Let people know. Let people know you like my YouTube videos. And it keeps the lights on, man. The more people in this party, the better it is for all of us. All right, guys, let's keep it going. Have a great day. And as my boxing coach says when you leave the building, all right, now, don't hurt nobody. Don't hurt nobody. And then when I leave, be careful. Be careful. Don't hurt nobody. Have a great day. Start that party in your ear holes. And you know what? If you want to go to Venmo, why not? Throw me a little something. It's like you're buying me a coffee or lunch at Darren Carter Comic on Venmo. At Darren Carter Comic on Venmo. Thank you. I'm available on Cameo. Okay, bye. That's enough. Let's get into it.
We would like you to be our new dumpster diver show. We're going to do a show about dumpster diving, and it's going to be funny, and you are going to be the guy. I said, okay, I'm interested. I need a gig. I got a wife and three kids that are suckling on my wallet. I should put nipples on my wallet and let them suck the money directly out.
And we're back. Hey, everybody. Today's guest, the one, the only, Mr. John DeVesta.
Thank you.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay. Thank you for having me back. You look good.
Thank you, man. Thank you. You know, you're going to crack up at this, but I shaved my head today, and I said, you know what? It's lockdown. It's quarantine. I'm not going to shave the top. So I believe it or not, even though I shaved the sides, I'm letting the top grow out, and I think the only people that know about it is me. Like, nobody can notice that I'm letting the top grow out.
Yeah, it's a bit invisible, and it's funny because you shaved the side of your head, and today I shaved my vagina.
Yeah, it's funny because I shaved the side of my head, and then when I at home we have a medicine cabinet, so I open up the medicine cabinet so you can see all angles, and I'm like, wow, I actually feel like I have more hair on the sides than I do the part that I didn't even cut. Like, my dream is that I can go like this and start spiking my hair up again, but it ain't gonna happen. Look, I'll even get real close to the camera. I don't think there's any hair up there. That's, I mean, this is as long. It's growing out. It's there's nothing there, dude. There's nothing there, man.
Okay, ready? My turn.
I know. Oh, yeah. I want to say you have a tiny little bald spot, but not really.
No, that's just because I was pushing.
Yeah.
No, you know what I have, dude? I have UFC hair. I have the hair of a UFC guy in his late 30s, early 40s.
Nice. And what's your secret to that?
I'm not sure. I don't know if I do anything special, but.
Do you wash your hair often?
That's a good question. I would say some about every couple of days, and then I put a little mousse in it.
Because I think homeless people have great hair, and I think it's maybe because they never wash it, you know?
I think it's just, that's a funny point. I think it's just luck of the draw, I guess. And it's in a very strange way, as hard as my life is, I feel like that's one thing. I mean, I have a five head instead of a four head. I have a five head. But, and I have my wings. You know what wings are?
Is that the Sopranos? Like you get the little gray sides. The sides are gray. Dude, like that. Poly walnuts.
Fucking suck on that. That's a wing.
Hey, I wanted to ask you. So I know you had your own television show. You've been in a bunch of movies. And before any of that, one of your biggest breaks came. You were New York's. Let me get this straight. You were New York's funniest cop. You were, am I right? You were a cop for 13 years.
I was a cop for 12 years, two different police departments, transit for 9 years in the subway in the mid 80s into the 90s. Our motto was "You ride, we hide." Then the transit police got taken over by the NYPD. And for the next 3.5-ish, 4 years, I was a NYPD, and I was in the homeless outreach unit my whole time as a New York City cop, and I did about 4 years in the homeless outreach unit with the transit police. And New York's Funniest Cop Contest had three different police departments.
NYPD. By the way, when you did the homeless outreach, did you notice that they had good heads of hair?
I did. I used to think like, wow, that guy like, you know, drinks his own urine and, you know, sleeps on a subway grate for the warmth. And he's got that great hair. And then a guy walks by that's worth $12 billion in a $1,000 suit. But he's selling cheese without a license. Have you ever heard that?
Selling cheese without a license?
Yeah.
No. Oh, like you get like you're a cheesehead or something?
I don't know. It doesn't even matter what it means. It doesn't have to have a meaning with a New York accent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I look at all these girls I went to high school with, and they're arm in arm with these guys, and I think it's their fathers. And it's not. It's their husbands, because all of them are selling cheese without a license.
Yeah.
I don't know where it comes from.
I was thinking about that though, because you know, the police, it's kind of a hot topic right now. People are not happy. They're not happy with the police, and you know, we're living in some strange times, you know. And I don't know if anytime soon they're going to have a New York's Funniest Police.
No, I don't think so. You're funny. No.
None of these police departments are having comedy contests right now.
No, well, no one is.
Yeah.
Comedy clubs are closed on a whole. I mean, and who knows when they're going to open?
I mean, those are two weird professions that comedy is really not happening right now, and neither was police work. That was, even though you got out of it a long time ago, but it's like.
Right. I mean, and I'm lucky now that I have this woodworking thing going on, because there is no comedy clubs. You know what I thought of? You know, they keep talking about social workers that show up to things.
Yeah.
Guess what? I moved 10,000 homeless people to the shelter.
Oh.
But usually there's no money. Like, you know, if I got a job tomorrow as a social worker for LA, you know, it's probably not paying $60 an hour. You know what I mean? All these jobs pay, you know, $14.10 an hour, and you have to work from 10 at night till 4 in the morning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they always make it so it's just not worth it for the next level of skilled person. You dig what I mean?
Yeah.
But like,
you know, it's funny. I saw a comedian on online, and she was like, hey, I'm taking this course. I'm going to be a life coach. I'm going to call it Laugh Coach or something like that. And I'm like, oh, wow, because, you know, comedians, I'm like, maybe that was something that we could kind of transition into, you know. You could be a comedian and then you're sort of a life coach.
No, there's room. Everyone likes to laugh, so there is room. As crazy as a desperate as what's the word, as surprising as never ending as all this is for comedians that actually made money in a comedy club, people do want to laugh. So it in a weird way, it could force you to monetize or do strange things. But then we're also judgmental. We're like, look what he's doing, guy. I mean, what does he need money for food? What does he need money for food?
Yeah.
And he's doing, you know, and watch this. If you do stand up in a parking lot, you're a loser that's, you know, one step away from giving dry hand jobs. Or if you're famous and you do parking lot stand-up shows, you're brave and hip. It's really, it's a crazy time.
It is crazy. It's crazy, man. It's, you know, let's before we talk about more police stuff, I want to say, I always like to go positive, and you know, and I don't know, you know what's funny? You're kind of a positive guy, even though sometimes to the naked eye, they might think you're a New York negative guy that's like just
a negative Nelly.
Yes, but you're kind of positive because sometimes you'll throw in something really positive. I'm like, wow, John, that was cool. But I was going to say,
what does positive mean? I don't even know what that means.
Here's what it means. Here's what in my world.
Is that like when you plug something in, there's a positive?
Yeah. What I'm saying about negative. That, like, if we were to look at like you know, the glass half full, for example, like out of this craziness, I can't believe this has been, it's been going on since March. This lockdown, everything shut down. I would say if I were to think positive, I had a really good 4th of July. I played horseshoes. We played volleyball. Family was together. Brother-in-law, cousins, we got together. And I thought that kind of stuff may not have happened without the lockdown because I'm off doing gigs. This person's doing their job. Everyone's their own, you know. In fact, my wife goes, you know, last summer, she goes, I don't know if you even – you know, really came up to the farm. You know, I was always, I'm not going to say chasing the almighty dollar, but like kind of was, you know what I mean? So if I were to think positive, I'm having more family time. Now, can you think of something positive that's happened because of this?
Yeah, 100%. It's made me appreciate my woodworking business and my woodworking skills. And in a very strange way, when I met a customer tonight that his area code was 845. And since we spoke about me being New York's funniest cop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
New York's second funniest cop, Joe Badalamente, his area code is 845. So he's the only guy on the face of the earth I know that has 845. It's in a really weird part of New York.
Wow.
And I get a text today, right? I can't do comedy, right? But I get a text that says, hey, John, I met you years ago. Can you make a desk for me? And his area code was 845 in the text.
Wow.
So I met him, got a bunch of zingers in about what part of town, like inside jokes about the 845 area code. You telling me how many people are going to have inside jokes about 845? Are you?
No.
And we had fun. I closed him. Now I got to be a salesman. I closed him. And he just, while we were on the air, beep. I just sent a PayPal.
Wow.
In my balls with the PayPals.
Wait, you sent a PayPal or you received one?
No, he sent one. I'm just saying.
Oh.
I'm telling you, it's a long-winded story to say that even though I'm not doing stand-up, I have another skill that probably for 10 or 15 years, every other comedian was like, "Ah, this douchebag is making tables and do." He's a woodworker. He quit the business.
It's like Santa Claus's workshop. Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of Santa Claus's elves.
Yeah. Yeah.
That and also my wife and I, you know, we hung out a lot while it was, she was out of work.
Yeah. I just thought of something. He builds tables that we write million-dollar scripts on.
Yeah, dude. You know what I'll say sometimes when I drop one off, like in a studio, which I do, or, you know, at a big Hollywood writer's house, I'll say, you know, you're going to write your, you're going to win your Oscar on my table. Dude, I've been in some big houses where they leave the key under the front door. And, you know, I don't want to drop names. Michael Caine told me it was rude. But a couple of pretty big writers. It just so happened the assistant's like, okay, the front door key will be under the front mat. And if you could just put the two stools where I said.
Hey, did
and
that
then watch this. I got to go too far like a mutt and leave a note that I'm an actor.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm a psycho. Now they don't even call me for the wood. It's over.
Hey, they didn't happen to leave you the key to Epstein's plane, right? When you went to Epstein. Did you ever build any tables?
He had good hair.
Epstein Island? He did have good hair.
Of course he did. He had hair like me.
Yeah.
I think today's 1 year since the allegedly killed himself. I thought I saw that. That goes quick.
Wow.
I think today's the 1 year anniversary. I would have told you it happened a month ago.
Yeah, what were we saying? So is 845, is that one of those numbers that every now and then you see it? Because you were telling me there's a certain number. You see a series of numbers, like at a stoplight, you might catch it on a license plate.
I always think of guy's shield numbers as a cop. I have a crazy, weird memory. Like 1203 is on every weird gas truck. It's in a stop sign shape, and it says 1203. Mm. And that was Bill Amendolaria's shield. He was in the homeless outreach with me for 8 years. He was 1203. If that's what you're talking about, anytime
I'm
I see
talking about,
on you know either old pictures, new pictures, I zoom in and look at their shield number. If God forbid they were killed in the line of duty, I'll try and like make a mental mark of it. But even now, when I text guys from 20, 30 years ago, and I'll say, "How was remember Torricelli 2389 Central?" And they'll LOL, he was 2389. How do you remember? So even the other day.
Yeah.
Hold on, watch this. Me and my son were driving, and there was like this 19 mid-80s Cadillac Seville convertible. And my son goes, "What kind of car is that?" I said, "It's a Cadillac Seville, late 80s. That's what you got driven home from the hospital in, but it wasn't a convertible." "Really? You had that nice car?" I bought it from Rick Martini. He was a transit cop, and he had the highest shield number in the whole police department. 6181 was the highest number in the transit police. And Rick Martini had it, and I bought a car from him. Your turn.
Nice. They, I was thinking about that with, first of all, I thought it was terrible what happened to George Floyd, as most of the world did. I don't even know one person who thought that. I mean, that was just sickening. It was disgusting and gross.
Right. I said when it came, I was, somehow it came to me very quickly. And I opened it, and it was the first. And I watch everything, I'm a mutt. And that was one of the first ones I said, "Oh, I can't watch anymore."
I didn't even really watch it. I've seen the still photos. I can't watch it. But what I wanted to ask you is, when it came to being a cop, like, did you ever see anything like that or close to that, or did you?
Well, first off, I stayed away from anybody that was either kind of really, what's the word, active, proactive, which I positioned myself in the precinct, they call it a district, mm-hmm. that I went to in Coney Island. Very few of us mm-hmm. were looking to be heroes. And it was just a known thing. You know what I mean? And so I didn't get involved in a lot of things that turned into other things. And the few times I did get involved, I never saw anything like that. I did see a gentleman get his balls kicked in. He had his hands cuffed behind his back. Sergeant walked up, said, "Spread your legs, father." And with big army boots, he kicked the guy in the balls as hard as he could from behind. However, that gentleman had just broken a woman's cheekbone at 8 in the morning and stole her wedding ring.
Ooh.
He could have just taken the wedding ring. He didn't have to do this.
Yeah.
So I stayed away from stuff like that. And I will tell you this, and nobody will tell you this. Mm. As much as we might not have done a lot of police work, when there was a radio call, you went. And as much as these guys were hairbags, the hairbag is like a cop that's kind of given up and just there, to have fun and get a pension. When the chips were down, they were there. They were always there. They didn't care if you were black, white, Hispanic, Puerto Rican, Asian. They didn't know what they were driving to or running to in a subway station. They didn't know who was run over by a train. And no one ever talks about that, ever. ever. I mean, there was no question that if something went down, and I'm talking about guys that weren't running around, you know, all ready to go. This was, hey, we got to go. And there was never, I'm not doing this, that, or that for that person. I mean, they've given their lives for other people that aren't of the same race, if we want to, you know.
Yeah, it's weird when they say defund the police or get rid of the police. I'm like, who's going to want to be a cop these days? I mean, it's like, I don't know, man. It sounds insane. You know, it's like
when I got on in 86, there was 2,900 guys in my class. Let me repeat that. Rumor has it that it was the biggest police graduation in the history of the human race. Wow. And I was there in Madison Square Garden, December 18th, 1986, with 2,900 of us. 380 of us were transit. That meant the next day we were going to the Transit Police Academy, commonly known as Subway School. And where was my older brother? He was in a hospital with a fractured skull. He hit 22 brand new cars the night before I graduated the police academy. Let me repeat that. 22 cars he ran into in a dealership. And we got charged for the stop sign he ran over, $600. But my point is, that's a true story. What was the question? They hired anybody, dude. When I got on to put 2,900 guys in a class, you had to go through 20,000 people. You had to have a high school equivalency and a New York State driver's license. That's it. Mm. So you're working. I wasn't working with some of the smartest people. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, I was wondering.
It was one girl in my academy class couldn't even squeeze the trigger on a revolver.
Really?
She went to the range, and for 7 days, she squeezed a tennis ball. And just sat in the bleachers.
Just to build up her finger strength.
I could have given her a different way. There was one girl in my class named Roberta from the Bronx. And she was like, if you go to like a robbery, do you have to break leather? Break leather means to get your gun ready. So if you go to a robbery, can you break leather? And the teacher's like, you know, it's once you're there, you got to feel it. But how do I know to feel it if I never had a robbery go down whilst I was there?
These are good questions. I don't know, man.
I'll say it again. With all due respect to everyone's cause, every single cop I know would give their – and have – guys I know have given their lives for other people. With no questions asked. And where is that, you know, where is that in the equation? You know what I mean?
Yeah. When you first got into Hollywood, everyone knew you were the cop, New York's funniest comedian. And you even had a sitcom where you were a cop. What was the name of the sitcom? Was it your name? DiResta?
It was called DiResta.
DiResta. It was on UPN.
The Unemployed Policeman's Network.
I wonder how, once things kick back into gear, I wonder how it's going to be for you in Hollywood when you go into a casting place and you're like, yeah, I was a cop.
I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to get offered a huge role where I'm the racist cop with the New York accent, with the nightstick, with the heavy hand that they put the N-word in my mouth from the script, not in my mouth as an actor. And the whole world's going to think that's the way he really is. He should cut wood and make tables. We need to take his career away because in a script. Dude, I auditioned once.
Yeah.
He already told it here. I don't want to say his name. He got a huge sitcom deal. He's a comedian. And he got the 10 best writers and the 10 best directors and producers to make a sitcom. Seinfeld guy, this guy, that guy's from Taxi, this guy's from the 10 biggest sitcom guys you can imagine. And I play a cop in the pilot that comes to his apartment three times because he's a New York comedian. Alone. I find out he's this, he's single, he's gay, he's got no money.
Yeah.
Finally, in the last scene of the sitcom of the pilot, I go, what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living? He goes, I'm a comedian. And the line is, tell me a joke. Okay? That's what the $4 billion worth of writers came up with. So I said, can I just do it my way? You guys, a lot of you guys know I was an ex-New York City cop. All right, go. Well, how dare he? Well, let him go. He's already up and running. He's doing it. And I'm reading it with the comedian. And I go, dude, it's my fifth time here. I never even, what do you do for a living? He goes, I'm a comedian. I go, you're not even funny. I mean, who's zooming who? I mean, what are you going to waste 12 years in these toilet bowls? In other words, I was, as a New York City cop, I was trying to help him from misery. Do you understand what I mean? The line, I didn't go on and on about the 12 years. All I said was, you're not even funny. And guess what? All 12 writers that are the greatest writers that ever lived in the history of the human race that all own six houses in Studio City and rent them out. Guess what they all said? They all groaned. They thought that John DiResta told this guy, John Mulaney, that he wasn't funny. They couldn't they couldn't see that I was playing the character in the scene that someone said action.
They thought you were broke character and were
douchebags. Couldn't even get behind that.
Hmm.
They were too stupid and short-sighted. They thought that I was calling John Mulaney not funny, John DiResta.
Mm.
My point is, if I become the mean cop on TV, because that's the only way they're going to portray cops, the whole world's going to take away everything from me because I said the N-word in a movie that they asked me to say.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, I don't know, to answer it's your question, there's such maggots, that they take down a show Cops or they take down Live PD. For what? What is, it's apples and oranges. This was a show that people made money at. People liked to watch. It was entertaining. I don't want to brag. I was on Cops. Thank you.
Hey.
But my point is.
Oh, I got a question. Go ahead. Say your point.
No, my point is, if they're so afraid of a show that really exists because it shows cops in a good light, to answer your question, no, there's not going to be a happy-go-lucky cop sitcom by John DiResta or Billy Gardell anytime soon.
And weren't there singing cops? There was even a show, it was called Cop Rock. That's another show that probably wouldn't be on right now. Cop Rock.
Mm-hmm. I just buried a good gay porno joke. I'm going to get a zit later.
There's another show. What about like Chips? Remember that with Eric Estrada?
I did a gig with Eric Estrada. I don't want to drop names.
Cool guy. He's a cool guy.
Got good hair.
He's got great hair, man. I remember he told me he got a I had lunch with them and he told me he just got done having a C&C, and I had no idea what that meant. Do you know what a C&C is?
Two fingers in the muffler.
No, cut and color with the hairstyle. Cut and color, C&C.
Yeah, he's the man.
Yeah, I would know nothing about that. I would know nothing about the cut or the color, but onto a lighter topic. You know, I had a pizza recently, and I got to tell you, I think the pizza is so good in my hometown, but I think it's because it's my hometown. I grew up with it. It means something to me. I wonder if that's the same thing with like New York pizza. Do New Yorkers?
Yeah, any New Yorker loves New York pizza. Anybody. It's crazy. I mean, if you live out here, like you can have whole conversations about it. Yeah. I mean, there are good pizzas here, but I think you had asked me this once, like, if that's where you grew up, is that what makes it special? And I say yes, because we've all traveled the world as comedians. And I went to Cincinnati to play. You remember Go Bananas? You land in Kentucky and you play in Cincinnati. And it was owned by an old Asian couple. She had a horizontal vagina. I don't know if you know that. And everyone kept saying, when you get to have a Coney dog, a Coney dog, a Coney dog. Now, I worked in Coney Island at the Nathan's. That was my steady post for 5 years. I eat Coney Island hot dog every day for my life for 5 years. Okay? I got IBS. All right? That's street cred. I carry 2 rolls of toilet paper with me every day.
Yeah.
Coney door. I get to Cincinnati. I got kind of check in the hotel. I go to the first place right next door, Coney Dogs. It's a sign. We got the Coney Dog. It was the worst ballpark hot dog this long that cost like 99 cents. It was like the White Castle of hot dogs.
Yeah.
And it had zero flavor.
Mm.
It was like, remember ballpark? Do you remember the slogan?
Yeah. No.
They suck when you cook them.
Is that what it says? They suck when you cook them?
No, they plump when you cook them. Why do I gotta explain another joke?
Where's, hey, do you know John Mulaney? You think he'll do my podcast?
No, I again, and watch this. John DeResta didn't think John Mulaney was not funny. John DeResta was thinking this guy is so on. And New York City cops, at the end of the day, are good guys. They're good, earnest guys that, again, will die in the street from being stabbed, shot, run over by a train, run over by a car, to save the life of somebody else that most likely will be of a different ethnic background. And that should never be forgotten. But I was just, the character would have said to this guy, to save X amount of years in the trenches of being a comedian, look, dude, you're not even funny. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Who's who?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and those writers weren't going to be like, oh, that was so much better than what we came up with. Right, they weren't going to give it to
you. They came up with Tell Me a Joke, dude. Mm. A four-year-old that's deaf, dumb, and blind can come up with that punchline.
I mean, back when I was starting out doing the open mics, that was one of the big jokes that everybody would do. Like, you're a comedian, tell me a joke. Well, you don't say you're a gas station attendant, pump me. You're a tax, you work for the IRS, screw me. You're a this and that.
Yeah, and guess what?
It's like,
and even that was coming from a bad angle, because the people that are asking to tell you a joke, they really want to laugh along. They want to give you a chance.
Yeah.
And here's a comedian going, I don't come and knock the fries out of your thing. I'm so important. I'm going to, I can only tell jokes when I get paid.
Right.
Fucking
right.
Jackoffs. You know what the pandemic did? It made me hate comedians even more than I normally do. I'm keeping it positive. How many more people can I see dance at their home for no reason?
TikTok, right?
Hold on. How about this one? Okay, welcome to my live show. Nobody's there yet. Okay. In a second, nobody's. Hey, Mandy, how's Utah?
Yeah.
Okay, we had two, we got one. Kenny. Hi, Kenny.
All right. Yeah, you know what? I watched this YouTube tutorial a couple of years ago, and the guy gave great advice. He goes, whenever you do a live stream, he goes, way more people are going to see the replay than they are the live stream. He goes, so right when you start, don't wait for people to come on. He goes, start the live stream, maybe with a little bio about yourself for the new people that haven't heard of you. So if you went live, you'd be like, hey, everybody, this is John DeResta, former NYPD transit, or whatever, blah, blah, blah. You just go right into it. I work with De Niro. I work with blah, 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 blah. And then you go into what you're going to talk about that day, as opposed to what you just did. Like, you don't want to be that guy that's like,
Hi, this is John DeResta. Welcome to my podcast. Be prepared. I'm going to drop more names than Oscar Schindler.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, okay.
Schindler's List or something?
There you go.
Hello.
That's number 9 I have to describe.
Yeah.
Did you get a GED?
No, I graduated.
Did you go to college?
Community college, 3 years.
Clovis?
Fresno.
Nice.
Clovis is the good part of town. Yeah. Anyways, who do you got back there? Is that some of your – I like your decorations.
No, it's I bought this at a garage sale. That's Audrey Hepburn. And then this other thing is like a spooky pirate warrior holding something up, maybe like a white flag. Wow. And he's got a beard and a helmet, and I found him in the garbage.
Wow.
I'm a dumpster diver. I listen to heavy metal and pick garbage.
Nice. What's the coolest thing you've ever found in the garbage?
One of my own items.
I forget. That's the weirdest question I've ever asked on my podcast.
I had to go to this Rush, wind up being a horrible woodworking project. A Russian guy that had like a, I don't know, he was French. He smelled French and he sounded French. And he's like, oh, ha, ha, ha. He owned some horrible fondue stand that you buy, like order for weddings. And I had to make the holder for the fondue, for the cheese, for the stick, for the chocolate, for the meat, for the stick, for the other cheese, all these little holes in this big device. And I left his house and pulled down a driveway and said, oh, look at that. There's like a tabletop. And I yanked it. I kind of cracked it out of the weeds and the dirt. And it was a tabletop that I had made years earlier. My name was at the bottom.
Wow.
Took it to the shop. Fix it up, put legs on it, and then watch this. Sold it with that backstory. Sold it that, hey, this thing, you know, is so old that someone owned it for 5 or 10 years in an alleyway down in like South LA. I found it and I spruced it up. That was part of the sales story.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a couple comedians I follow, Steve McGrew and Dustin Ibarra, and they both have these metal detectors. They're big into metal detecting now. They're going out to like beaches and just country areas out in the country. And one of them was out in Texas and he found a coin, a dime. I want to say it was a dime and it was from like 1890.
And did it have any worth?
I think so. I Googled it and it said it was worth $75 on Google. But have you ever got into like metal detecting? Is that something you're interested
in? No, I would like to if I had the time, but I parked on Lancashire today and I had a quarter and a nickel and I went to go to my bank. And the nickel was so old that I said, I can't put this in the machine. This happened today. And I couldn't read the year because I'm getting old, but it had to be like 1940 or 1950. It was of a different metal. It was a different color. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
Watch this. I'm a certified garbage picker because watch this. I got taken to do the radio in Milwaukee by a guy named Butch, who used to be a garbage man till his foot got run over and his ankle got crushed. So he's a security guard at a comedy club. And like 7 a.m. on Friday, he drives down, you know, Milwaukee Avenue, like 10 miles. We do the radio. I kill. Ha, ha, ha. How can I be so funny? Right? We drive back. He takes like Sheffield Boulevard. And about halfway through, I go, dude, you're a garbage picker. And he busted out laughing because no good garbage picker takes the same route to and from a place. Because it doubles your chances of finding good stuff. And we busted out laughing. I'm sure I saw him, you know, probably eyeing the alleyways too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't want to say this out loud, but I got into a bad auto accident, a garbage picking. My eyes locked on some wood like this, and I knew I had some freedom, you know, some space in front of me. And I guess I looked a second too long. I looked up, dead stop traffic, and I hit the brakes. Yeah, and I thought there was going to be carnage. Like blood and death. And thank God it was just dense.
So and I remember.
That's it.
Okay. I was going to say, because every now and then I'll see some people, you know, leaving LA or they're moving apartments and I'll take photos of it and I'll send it to you. And you're like, thanks, dude. And a lot of times the stuff I'm sending you, you're not that interested in. Like, you're not interested.
No, it's got to be because I have the sickness, but it's controlled. In other words, in the old days, I would go pick that up because I might use it for something. And I know that stuff just builds up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I saw something today that I said I could fix that and sell it. And on my way back, I'll get it. But I'm getting old. And like 9 hours later, I remembered it.
Yeah. Like what's something you wouldn't want? Here's a kitchen set from IKEA. You're like, it's kind of cheap and whatever. Am I right about that?
Like, in other words, like an armoire. Like, it, you know, it's big, like I can't reuse the wood of an armoire. You know what I mean? It's like doors and it's drawers.
What's something you would like?
Planks. Like every now and then you just see 5, 10, 15 nice pine planks that someone took a fence apart, someone took a table apart, someone took a shelf unit apart. Those planks are 50, 60 years old with a color on them and a patina, and those get turned into a rustic table, and it looks like old barn wood.
That's cool.
I'll tell you another Hollywood story. I got called in to do a show about dumpster diving.
Oh, by the way, real quick before, let's plug your show. You have a show on the air right now.
I have a show on Hulu right now called Hammered with John and Jimmy DiResta. Takes place in Brooklyn, New York, and once per episode, we make some funky, funky items, and I'm on the streets of New York, and I mock everyone and everything. There's only one way to mock, and that's John DiResta style.
I think he's taking a bow, folks. Oh, okay. You're showing the hair. I thought you were taking a bow, like, ta-da.
I was doing too, dude. That was called a double entendre. Right?
Maybe I should. Ooh, I look like I have more hair if I put my glasses on my head.
Can I tell you something about a Hollywood person that doesn't know her ass from her elbow?
Tell me.
I get called in, and I'm the expert in garbage picking. I'll tell you how I'm an expert. When my dad was in his 30s, he was in a bowling league in Oceanside, Long Island, about four towns over from us. On a Saturday morning, he would go bowling from like 10:30 to 1:30, and he would drop me, Jimmy, and Joey off at Consumers Distributor, which is basically Target or Kmart. And what did we do for 3.5 hours? We rumbled and rustled through their dumpster that was 10 feet deep. And we got all kinds of display, you know, a shiny metal display that you'd put sunglasses on, look like it had a value. Or people would take back big boom boxes or JV, what do you call them? The tape?
Yeah.
JVC?
JVC, what are those called? The boom boxes.
And guess what? They didn't work, so they threw them out. They got their money back and they threw them out. And my brother Jimmy would go, and the wire would be fixed. Now we got a radio this big in the backyard. You know what I mean? So, real quick, once you learn how to dumpster dive, you're not going in there for you're not going behind the meat market. You know what I mean? You know what you're looking for. So I had a meeting with this girl from Hollywood, heavy quotes, Hollywood. We would like you to be our new dumpster diver show. We're going to do a show about dumpster diving, and it's going to be funny, and you are going to be the guy. I said, okay, I'm interested. I need a gig. I got a wife and three kids that are suckling on my wallet. I should put nipples on my wallet and let them suck the money directly out. But I'm keeping it positive. At the end of the meeting, she goes just like this. If we do the show, the cold opening's going to be so funny. Do you agree? You're going to have spaghetti all over you that you came up out of the dumpster and you had spaghetti because you were in a dumpster with funny spaghetti. She has no idea that the people that would watch this show would tune out because they saw the first 10 seconds of that's not the life they live.
Right.
And I will tell you, people do find you. Like, I go to a lot of antique stores, a lot of lumber yards. I go to a lot of, and I get a lot of people like, how do I know your voice? I was at a lumber yard once. The guy, all he sold was reclaimed wood. It was like Jurassic Park. I mean, he had beams 4 foot by 4 foot by 20 feet. Like, each beam weighed 6 tons. I mean, this guy had so much old wood, and I go there, and he's like, I know your goddamn, the voice, the rhythm. Week later, I go back. He's like, why am I thinking of New York and maybe your son and your brother? And I go, dude, Dirty Money, Discovery, 10 episodes. And he was a guy that had the sickness for old wood, so much so that he sold it. In other words, I don't know if you know, when you have the sickness, to feed the sickness, you buy stuff that's old. And then you resell it. So it feeds the sickness.
Hey, now you're doing these reality shows for other people. Now, maybe now is the time to use your own camera on your own phone and just start shooting yourself doing it. Because
I know. I only do it in 1 minute versions, but I do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like you said, remember you said you don't want to say you were chasing the money?
Yeah.
But a lot of my, again, I know it's easy to take the phone out, and I do a video or two a day, but it's just sometimes it's like, boom, boom, boom. Okay, here's how much it is. Here's a receipt. But you know what I mean? And you forget. Yeah. But with every project I make, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. You've seen those faux live edge benches.
Yeah.
I keep posting. And you know why I keep posting them?
Why is that?
People are reacting. People from other countries.
Wow.
You know, people that see my post 1,000 times a day are like, hey, these benches look like they're cut out of a tree. And they're not. They look like it, though. You know what I'm talking about.
It looks amazing. We have to wrap it up, but I want people to follow you. Where can they follow you? On Instagram.
We're friends.
We are, but I have to do another one in a half hour.
Who's the next guest?
I can't say because I don't know if they're going to cancel or not, but I told them. But where can
all right, dude, go ahead. I'm just joking. Thank you for having me back on. Always fun. I'm at Diresta West Coast on Facebook. Diresta West Coast on Facebook. Instagram at Diresta West Coast. And then if anybody wants to email me directly, DirestaJohn@gmail.com. DirestaJohn@gmail.com. And
okay, it's John Mulaney. I got John Mulaney on. He's going to be on next.
Yeah, funny. And again, nothing against him. That's a story.
I'm joking. Yeah,
people.
Yeah.
People are very short-sighted. And to answer your question, to defund the police is the most stupidest, ridiculous, horrific thing I have ever heard of. And can I tell you why? Can I sum it up in 30 seconds?
Please do.
It's human nature to go crazy when there's no supervision. We all know that. That's why we had parties as kids. That's why we go camping and drink and smoke pot in a camper. When I was a construction worker in Newport Beach, California in 1984, the boss kept saying, I have to leave Friday at noon. No fucking up. Friday at noon, I'm going to have everyone watch each other. It's going to get back to me. The second his car went down the hill at Newport and went out of sight, beers, pot, everybody. The second. So if you tell a whole community that there's no police or there's less police or it's going to take 5 hours to get there, what are they going to do? Take a look what they've done over the last two or three weekends.
Yeah.
Shootings are up. Killings are up. Guess why? It's a carnival atmosphere. No, there's no one to stop us. It's never, ever going to get better. Ever. Until you get logical.
Yes.
Okay, Seacrest out. In my balls.
Any words of wisdom on the way out? Anything positive? Anything that you'd like to leave our younger viewers with? Something that they could take on later in life?
Don't get married. No, I'm not sure. You know what? There's an old saying, don't get mad, get funny. So for the 10-15 percent of who watches you are comedians or actors.
Yeah.
Don't get mad, get funny, you know? And thank God. I've been able to turn my sadness into gold.
Yeah, see, it's true. It's true, yeah.
I'm a sad fish. I'm sad.
And you make it funny.
Don't get mad, get funny. How about this? Don't get sad, get funny.
I like that.
Who's the ass on
that, buddy? Yeah.
We're done with this interview.
Everybody listen to Darren Carter.
Yeah.
We all know he's the party starter. So if you want to listen to a podcast for free, then listen to a Pocket Party. Pocket Party. Durant. Pocket Party.